So we're here on Daf Vav Amud Aleph. We're up to Gufa. So let's see if we can find Gufa. It shouldn't be so hard to find. We are on line 3. Do you see the end of line 3? It should say Gufa. So let's just review the last thing that we concluded. And that is that there's such a thing as a partial ordination. What does that mean, partial ordination? The license, what's called the horos heter, the heter shus lahoros, divides up into three sections. That's yore yore, which means horos isa v'heter. Number 2, yadin yadin, which means a horos din. And number 3, yatir b'choros yatir. And we saw that in the case of Rav, Rebbe conferred upon Rav a partial smicha. He only gave him reshus as far as yod, but not as far as yatir b'choros. So we had a long discussion as to why he was inhibited. He was hesitant to do so. We said that also you could give a time limitation in a heter hora. You can say that I can give you a license and permission to decide cases up until a certain point in time, but not beyond that point in time. That's what we had in the sugya here on Daf Heyomid Beis. And now we have a statement of Shmuel. So let's just look at the statement of Shmuel. We'll have to go back to Daf Hei Amud Beis, and we'll take a look towards the bottom of the page on Daf Hei Amud Beis. Just one second. Let's see if we can. I'm just trying to find a place we can start. About 10 lines up from the bottom. Do you see the word Etzlenu?
Yeah.
And then it says Gufa. Yes? Everybody? Okay. So we have a statement of Shmuel, which was back on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and Shmuel was of the opinion that if two judges without a third judge would issue a verdict, that decision is binding. And the Torah validates and recognizes that din. Shnayim shedonu dineihem din. Now, dineihem din means two things. Number one, it means that there's no reversing of their decision. That means that if the decision was handed down that Reuven has to pay Shimon, then that's irreversible. Reuven has to pay Shimon. It also means, under certain circumstances at least, that if the judges made an error in judgment, then it would be their responsibility to repay, let's say, Reuven, if Reuven took an irreversible loss. Why? Because since the judgment was done in error, and we'll see exactly what kind of error they made, therefore they have to compensate Reuven for losing all that money. However, is this the right way of doing it? Does Shmuel advocate and recommend two judges? The answer is no. El shenikra bezdin chatzuf. Now the word chatzuf here means chutzpah. Chutzpah means there was a gall, there was audacity on their part to go ahead and violate the takonis chachomim. Chachomim required three judges and no less. And we had a long discussion back on Daf Gimel as to why the Rabbanon required three judges. They wanted to guarantee that at least one of the judges would be intelligent enough. It shouldn't be a decision made by Yoshve Kronos, you know, those who are totally ignorant of the law, in which they may come to the conclusion that Reuven has to pay when Reuven doesn't have to pay. So we want to guarantee that at least on this court there'll be someone who has experience in judgment, and therefore they required three. So Shmuel is going to say the following. Certainly the Torah would recognize and validate this judgment of two judges. Not only that, but even the Rabbanon will accept that judgment. But they're called the Bezin Chatzah because they're undermining the enactment of the Chachamim to have a court that's made up of a minimum of three judges. So that's called Over Al Takonas Chachamim. Now it's interesting that there's a whole discussion about the etymology, if you're interested, this on the side, of the word Chatzuf. Very often in Lashon Kodesh, there are what we call Osios HaMeschalfos, that they're one letter replaces a different. And quite often, it has to do with a similarity in pronunciation. So for example, there's another word in Lashon Kodesh that sounds awfully similar to the word chatsuf, and that is chasuf. Chasuf with a sin, right, a shin with a dot on the left side. That is a word in Lashon Kodesh which is used commonly even in modern Hebrew. Chasuf. Now the word chasuf means it's exposed. It's revealed. It's out in the open. Now I'm trying to remember the English word. Oh yeah, that's the word I wanted to use. Confidentiality. You familiar with that? If you know a little bit about confidentiality, in fact, in literally contemporary life, we had a case, happens to be a friend of mine, a rabbi, who a woman came and in confidence she revealed something about her personal life, and then somehow the word got out and she sued him for violating confidentiality. In any event, there seems to be a halacha, again we're not ready for this yet, but I'll just throw it out there, of confidentiality, meaning when Bezdin issues a decision, unless it's a unanimous decision, we really don't know who said what. Meaning, if you have a dissenting view, then you can never really know for sure which judge was the dissenting judge. So what do I mean? Let's say, for example, you had a court made up of three judges, correct? Now, in the case of three judges, if let's say they ruled against Reuven on behalf of Shimon, and Reuven holds a grudge against the judges, that's natural. You know, you get angry because they found you guilty as accused. Then Reuven can point a finger at which of the judges of these three. If it was not a unanimous decision, it was a decision of two against one. Which of the judges is he going to point to, assuming they determine the case in closed doors? He can never know. So that protects the confidentiality of the judges. If, on the other hand, it was a unanimous decision, then it's called chasuf. Chasuf means it's open, it's exposed. There's no confidentiality here, because if Reuven has grievances against these judges because he thinks they judged against him, he knows exactly who voted because it was a unanimous decision.
Is it revealed to him what the vote was? Is that,
say it again?
The Gemar Din, is it revealed what the
vote? I didn't hear the first part of your sentence, I'm sorry.
The Gemar Din, is it revealed
Din,
how many people voted for what? Or how?
So that's what I'm telling you. If it's a, if there are only two members of the court, then what does that tell you?
Right.
It had to have been a unanimous decision. Right. So that's called a Beis Din Chasuf. Chasuf meaning it's exposed, you know, because by definition, if there are only two judges on the court, then you know it was a unanimous decision. If it was one against one, that's not a decision at all. By the way, do we have to open up a window or anything like that? Or just me? I don't know.
No, I agree.
We should open a window? I'll open a window. Maybe we can turn on the air conditioning. I don't know.
Push from the inside.
It's
so Chanoch, let me get back to your question.
On the right.
If there are two judges on the court, yeah, then there's no room for confidentiality here. I don't know. I'm just playing a game here. I don't know who voted against me, right? I'm Reuven who took a loss. The answer is I know who voted against me, because by definition, if they issued a verdict, it had to be both judges that voted against me. So I can hold a grievance against both judges. Not so in the case of three judges, because then the decision may have been unanimous, maybe there was a dissenting view, and I can never point my finger at any particular judge and say, well, he's the one who voted that I have to pay $1,000, found me, you know, as we said, using the phrase, guilty as. So the idea of a Beis Din Chasuf here, instead of Chatzuf, again, if you switch the tzadi to a sin, might imply that at this point, since there are two judges on the court, and obviously the decision was unanimous, that itself exposes them to any sort of grievance. Now again, when I say grievance, you know, there's no, you know, in Western law, I don't know, every country I guess is different, but certainly in U.S. law, there's something called an appeal. You know, you can appeal to a higher court. Here in Jewish law, once the decision was made by a valid court, then it's irreversible. There's no appeal. So that Reuven really walks around for the rest of his life. Imagine if it was a case in which he had to pay $50,000 for, you know, in damages or whatever it might be, when he thinks he's guiltless and he thinks that there was not enough evidence, or maybe the Eidim lied and purged it, whatever it might be. He's going to carry around that grievance against these two judges for the rest of his life. And we'd rather have a certain confidentiality whenever possible. And if it's going to be an odd number of judges, we don't know if it was a unanimous decision or whether it was a dissenting view. And therefore, you can second guess for the rest of your life. Again, if the Dayan wants to admit, you know, to whisper into Reuven's ear that I found you guilty, okay, that's his problem, you know, if the Dayan chooses to do so. But at least Allah wants to structure the courts in a way that none of the judges have to be so exposed, you know, they're so vulnerable. They can maintain that secret ballot kind of situation. In any event, this is the statement of Shmuel. So let's review what Shmuel has to say. Shmuel has basically three sentences, three prepositions. Number one, he's telling you that on a Doraisa level, you don't need three judges. I'm going to come back to this point in just a second, because when I tell you don't need three judges, that means you need less than three judges. Now, what does less than three judges mean? It either two or one. Okay, so that's what we're going to have to discuss in just a second. And that's the subject of this Tosas Dira Maskel Shnayim. The second proposition of Shmuel is that although on a Doraisa level, and we'll soon see in Tosas, one judge is enough, and how much more so two judges, but the Rabbanan required three judges, and that was the sugi of Shmuel back on Daf Gimel, and that's the Gzeres Chacham, the Takonis Chacham of three judges. And preposition number three is that the Rabbanan would not undermine the decision that is valid according to Torah law of less than three judges. They're going to, you know, post facto, over the ever, they're going to recognize that decision, but the Beis Din is called a Beis Din Chatzuf. In other words, you know, this is a strike against the judges, because they shouldn't have gone ahead and issued a verdict based on a court that was made up of less than three judges, because they undermined the Takonis Chachamim. Now, Tosas points out, Hadinokat Shnayim. Now, I'm going to skip a little bit just for pedagogical purposes. Aval hu adin dechad nami dine dina. Tosas says that the word Shnayim should not mean only two, but rather even two. Okay, now there's a chiddush here of even two, but one judge would be good enough. Now, Rabosai, this has to do with a sugya back at the beginning of Sanhedrin called Ein Kan Eruv Parshios. So if you hold Ein Kan Eruv Parshios in a case of halvos, in law debts, then the Torah never required neither three judges nor three, certainly not three mumchim, because the word Elohim times three never appears and never applies to the parasha of Halvos in Kesef Talves Ami. That's a whole new parasha, and therefore Tosas says, according to Shmuel, one judge on a Doraisa level would be sufficient. Now, if that be the case, then why does Shmuel say that we can recognize and validate the post facto the decision of two judges? Why couldn't he tell me a bigger chiddush that even one judge is valid, because the Torah recognizes the power of one judge? And that's the first part of this Tosas. He says, Afilu Shnayim. What do you mean Afilu Shnayim? Tell me a bigger chiddush than Afilu Echa. What's the chiddush of Afilu Shnayim? So the answer is, Havu Bezdin Chotzef. Shmuel wants to tell you that it is an absolute insult to the Takonis Chachamim to set up a Beis Din with less than three judges. And don't tell me had two judges, and two judges issued a unanimous decision, which means that even had there been a third judge, it wouldn't have made a dent of a difference. Let him dissent, but we still have a majority. We're guaranteed a majority if the two judges were unanimous. And nevertheless, Shmuel wants to tell you that even though there are two judges, and the third judge, as we said before, would not add or subtract anything, nevertheless, it's still called a Beis Din Chotzef. That's the point of Tosas. So we know now, in the light of this Tosas, that Shmuel is operating with the assumption that one judge is sufficient. And here we mentioned a Ketzos HaChosh. Now, Asher, you asked me where is the Ketzos HaChosh, and I'll just try to find it for you. It's in Simon Gimel, Right, Choshen Mishpat goes on and on for hundreds of simonim, but in the third simon, that's really at the beginning of Choshen Mishpat, Sif Katan Aleph, he explains in a very revolutionary chapir, a new chiddush, as we discussed at great length, that the reason why the Torah recognizes the decision of one judge is not b'toras bezdin, it's not that one judge is a court, but rather kehoras isur v'heter, demore umalamed es hadin. He is teaching the law. And the maybe we'll just quickly review. I don't know, I'm always confused as to whether or not, you know, in the time allotment that we have, we should review or we shouldn't review, but let me just review it anyway. Okay, then, and you'll bear with me. What is the implication of the ketzos that one judge is not a bezdin? So there are many, many implications. Let's start with the easy one. If we define one judge as a horas isur v'heter, melamed lano sadin, he's teaching us what the law is in this case, and who has to pay who according to Jewish law, but it's not a formal, it's not elevated to the status of Psak Bezdin, then there are some really great advantages to a single judge. For example, a judge cannot be related to either the Tovea, I'm trying to think of the English word, the plaintiff, right, or the Nitba, the defendant. If he's related to one or the other, he's possible, he's completely disqualified. According to the Ketzos' understanding of Shmuel, that the Torah validates one not as a Bezdin, but rather as Horas Yisra V'heter, and Horas Yisra V'heter, you could be my brother and ask me a Shiloh, right? You could be my son and ask me a Shiloh, and I can paskin for you. That's called Horas Din, in Yisra V'heter. Another law is, Bezdin cannot issue a verdict at night. Night, Lila is possible to do. You know, we close the courts at night. That's not so in the case of one judge that handed down a decision which is a horas isur v'heter, the way the Ketzos learns it. Another nafkamina might be, to what extent does the decision of that one single judge compel the litigants in an irreversible way where they that's it, it's a done deal. They have to accept that decision. And they can't take it, as we said, appeal to a higher court. Well, if it's just a horas isur v'heter, again, there may be some ethical issues. What do I mean by ethical issues? I once had this, I was very upset about this. I used to be a Rosh Shiva in Yeshiva where the boys came for a year in Israel. And every year we had the same shaila, did they have to keep 2 days of yontif, right? Today is yontif sheni for chutzlikim. So I always paskin for Ashkenazim. We had some Sephardic students as well, and then I would send it to Rav Avadia. That was a whole different story. They got slapped a little bit. That's a Simon Chivot. If you walked out of Rav Avadia, you didn't get slapped. You know, you're insulted. You know, that's the way it worked. But for Ashkenazic, Ashkenazic students, we paskin 2 days yontif. So this fellow had what I call a chutzpah. He asked me the shaila, and then he went to somebody else who he knew would give him a heter to do malach on Yotav Shevi. You know? So we don't shop around for heter. But technically speaking, if you have a horas din of isa v'heter, you can ask for another opinion, technically. Yeah, and there are certain ethical issues. But in Bezdin, you can't. Once you go to a Bezdin and they decide the law, that's no blacks, no backs touch blacks. You know, there's no reversing. So again, the idea of Shmuel that one judge is sufficient, and the way the Ketzos interprets it under a whole new category for Horas Isur V'heter, that's a different situation entirely. Now I'm wondering what the Ketzos would say if there were two judges. You see, here in the case of two judges, we could argue that that's a bezdin already. Why? Because we have a shakla v'tar yavedin u'dvarim back and forth amongst these two judges. And if they came to a unanimous decision, where even if there had been a third judge on the court, meaning there was a dissenting view, it wouldn't change by one iota the final decision. Maybe that could be a bezdin. I don't know. But that would... that would really undermine this whole Tosfos, because then I would say that Shmuel is specifically talking about Shnayim Shedonu, and when Tosfos says Lav Dafka, he says Hu Adin Dechad Nami Dina Dina. That's not really fair. It's not fair to say that Shmuel is talking about a Beis Din. Now it's true that the Rabbanon enacted a gzera, a takana, which requires three court judges on the court, but maybe Shmuel is saying that Rabbanon would still recognize a Beis Din made up of two judges if they came up with a unanimous decision, because it would make a dent of a difference if the third judge would have been on the court. I don't know, but Tosfos seems to assume that there's no difference between one judge and two judges. And I think in the frame of reference of the Ketzos, he's saying that less than three judges is simply not a Beis Din. It doesn't have the status of a Beis Din. It could be a Ras, Isav Eter, but that's it. Yosef Rav Nachman v'Kamar l'Hashmata. Rav Nachman was sitting. Usually the Rebbe is in a sitting position. Again, that's different today. And the Gemara says in Masechta Megillah that after Misa, after the Misa of Rabbi Gamliel, you know, Choli Yard Halolam, the students couldn't stand during the Shiva. In the old days, you know, back in the day, the Rebbe sat and the students stood. And I have a contemporary interpretation of that. I don't think that's what the Gemara had in mind. But I would say the students had to stand so they don't fall asleep. But we know that people fall asleep even in a standing position. That happened to be in the army once. I actually was standing and sleeping. But thank God my buddies, you know, held on to me. In any event, the real reason why the Talmidim have to stand is called Kavod HaTorah. And Mishameis Rav Gamliel Batal Kavod HaTorah Yardachu Liolam, and we allowed the Talmidim to sit on the benches. So Yosef Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman now is sitting Uka Amar LaHashmata, and he's transmitting this Shmata. Shmata means this halacha, the sugya, that the halacha of Shmuel, that even two judges, if they handed down a verdict, although it's a Beis Din Chatzuv, nevertheless it's a valid decision, it's irreversible. Eisvei Rava L'Rav Nachman. The outstanding student of Rav Nachman was Rava. And we have here three generations. The first generation of Amoraim is Shmuel. The next generation is Rav Nachman. And the third generation is Rava. So Rava, as a Talmud of Rav Nachman, stands up and he asks Akasha. And it's very interesting because Rava is quoting a Mishnah. You know, that's very rare that, you know, your Rebbe, Rav Nachman, the great Rav Nachman, he's giving a shir. And you're quoting a Mishnah. A Mishnah as a Akasha on Rav Nachman. Now, what does the Mishnah say? First of all, where is this Mishnah? This Mishnah is much later on in Masechta Sanhedrin. It's on Daf Chof Tes. So we'd have to turn almost 20 Blat Gemara, even more than 20 Blat Gemara, in order to get to this Mishnah. If anybody wants to open up to the Mishnah, it's on Daf Chof Tes and Aleph. And the Mishnah states that if you have a Beis Din made up of three judges and they decided a monetary case, Afilu Shnayim Mizakim O Shnayim Achayvim, if one of the three judges pulls the plug, so to speak, and he says, "I simply don't know," it's a natural occurrence. You know, not every case is so crystal clear that you can anticipate that all three judges would issue a psak. You know, have a decision. Sometimes the weight of the responsibility of having a decision is so heavy that one of the dayanim simply says, "I gotta pull out of here." Any old day, I simply don't know. I've waited back and forth in my mind overnight. I lost sleep over it, and I can't come to any definite conclusion. So the Mishnah requires in such a case that they add a third judge. Basically what it means is they have to start from scratch. The third judge did not hear any of the evidence. He's brand new on the case. You know, they'll give him a file to read, but he still has to get, you know, hear the edim. And it's got to start from scratch. Says Rava, I don't understand how you, Rav Nachman, in the name of Shmuel, are going to interpret this Mishnah. You just finished telling me that if the decision was handed down by two judges, it's a valid decision. It's irreversible. V'im Isa, if that's the case, Lehevi Kishnaim Shedonu. Why do we have to say that they should add a third judge to the court? Why not just rely on the... And not only why not, but we have to rely on the decision. There was already a valid decision, which is irreversible, of two judges. So the Gemara says, "Shiny Hassan," that case in the Mishnah is different. Now here, in order to understand what the Gemara is going to say, we have a principle in adjudicating cases that sofa din kitchila sadin, which means that there has to be a basic similarity between the din that we started and the din that we ended. So for example, if we go with the ketzos that I mentioned before, if there were less than three judges, that's a whole different type of din. That's a ras isa v'heter. So if you start with two judges from the get-go, then what you're looking for is a ras isa v'heter, but not so in the case where you started with three judges. There the case was brought in front of a bezdin. If it's brought in front of a bezdin, we need a bezdin to conclude the case. And what I'm sharing with you is the insights of the Ran, you know, the Chidushi Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim. He lived about 8 centuries ago. No, I'm exaggerating. Maybe he lived about, the Ran was in the 13th century. So we're talking about 800 years ago, probably. And the Ran says that the Gemara here is going to make a distinction between the Tchilas Din and the Sof Din, and that's what the Gemara says, Shaini Hasam de Mikara, when they began the Din, Adaita de Tlosa Yesivi. Their mindset was to take their dispute in front of what? Again, literally translated, what does Tlosa mean? Three judges, correct? But conceptually, what does that mean? Three judges. A Bezdin. They wanted to be judged by a Bezdin. And as we said before, a Bezdin has very far-reaching powers. And their decision is irreversible. So they wanted a real decision, the whole nine yards, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. They wanted a decision of Bezdin. And therefore, we need a decision of Bezdin. The ultimate decision has to be that of a Bezdin. We can't have a decision of Bezdin with less than three judges. Hacha, but here in the case of Shmuel, Lama Daiti de Tlosa Yesivi. When they began their judgment, they weren't asking a Bezdin. There were no three judges there. There were only two judges. And therefore, what they were asking for was Oras Isa Vehetta, and that's what they got. And if they got it, says Shmuel, that's valid. Esve, now Rav asks a second kasha, raises a second objection to Rav Nachman. And this one is not from a Mishnah, but from a Braisa. The Braisa records a machlokus between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer adin bishlosha. When you paskin in dine momenos, you need shlosha. That's called din. Din means to hand down a decision which is going to be imposed on the two litigants, like it or not. Pshara, that's a whole different concept. We call it in modern English mediation. That's bishnayim. All you need is two judges. Now, mediation means that two litigants who have a dispute will agree to accept the compromise of two judges. Two judges will work out what they consider a fair compromise. Now Rav Shimon Gamliel says the following, V'yofa koch pshara mikoch adin. Interesting. He says that the power of pshara is greater, it supersedes that of an absolute din. That's counterintuitive. You would have said din is a decision of Beis Din that has a tremendous amount of weight. Pshara just means some sort of an agreement to take the case in front of mediation. Name. He says the exact opposite. That there's a tremendous power to pshara. Why? Because since the two litigants agreed to accept this pshara, that creates an absolute commitment on their behalf, on their part, to accept the pshara. And that's called Einom Yecholim Lachzor Behem. They have no recourse to appeal the case or to ask for a different decision. Why? Because they accepted pshara. Once you accept pshara, and this, by the way, even in contemporary life, this Gemara that we're learning has tremendous repercussions, because, for example, if you want to go to a secular court here in Israel, again, every country is different, but in Israel, if you want to go to a secular court and you've already agreed to mediation, the court will simply throw you out of, they will not accept your decision, your request for a din. So imagine the following: two litigants, Reuven and Shimon, that have a dispute. They come in front of a court here in Israel, a secular court, an Israeli court, and the Israeli court rejects them. Why? Because they signed what's called a pshara, shtar pshara. They committed themselves to a pshara. It's very similar in halacha. In halacha also, once the two litigants commit themselves to a pshara, that's it. Those two judges that were empowered to be their pshara, they will issue a decision. That decision is absolutely binding. However, in the case of a bezdin, ishnayim shedanu balei dinim yicholim lachzor b'hem. So now watch this. They're two cases, and they're very, very similar. They're similar in, let's say, 3 out of 4 points. Number one, it's the same two litigants. It's the same monetary issue. And in both of these two scenarios, they came in front of two judges. But there's one major difference. In case A, we'll call it, the same litigants, the same amount of money is being disputed, the same number of judges. However, they signed and agreed to a pshara. In case B, they came in front of two judges. They wanted to hear a decision, but they never signed the pshara. They never committed themselves to a mediation. And the nafkamina is going to be that if there were only two judges, is then bali dinim yecholim lachzor b'hem. You know, one of the bali dinim surely doesn't like the decision that was handed down by the two judges. He has recourse to appeal the case and take it to a different bezdin. Why? Because how many judges were there on the court? Only two. Wait a minute, Shmuel just finished telling me that if there are two judges on the court, again, they're chutzpahdik, but nevertheless, their decision is binding. If their decision is binding, what does the Gemara mean here when it says "Validinim yicholim lachzor b'hem"? That the litigants can decide we don't want this decision; we want to take it to a court. In the case of pshara, they signed an agreement, and it's an absolute commitment which is binding in monetary law, and therefore "Ainim yicholim lachzor b'hem." Once the pshara was issued by these two judges, it's absolutely binding. But why in the case of two judges do we say that it's not binding and the Bali Dinim can say we don't like this decision and we want to go to a different court? So apparently Shmuel is not right. This brisa cannot be reconciled with Shmuel. Shmuel says Shnayim Shedanu Dineim Din, and the whole thrust of Dineim Din means that it's an irreversible decision and no one has the right to take it to a different court. So how do we reconcile Shmuel with this brisa? So the Gemara says on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, V'chi Tema, maybe you'll argue, the Pligi Rabbanan Aleid Rav Shim Ben Gamliel. This brisa that Rav is invoking only mentions the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, but maybe the Chacham disagree with Rav Shimon, and they would indeed say that even in a decision handed down by two judges, it's absolutely binding. There's no Einam Yechom Lachzor Bahem. So very nice. This brisa says that there's a contrast between Shnayim Shedanu in Din and Shnayim Shasu Pshara. Well, that brisa was authored by Rav Shimon Gamliel. It doesn't reflect the sheet of the Chachamim. Shmuel doesn't have to kowtow. He doesn't have to buckle to the brisa of Rav Shimon Gamliel if the Chacham rejected it. So Gemara said, "Nay, the Chacham didn't reject it." I don't know if you remember this statement of Rabbi Avohu. This was back on the Beis Amid Beis, and Rabbi Avohu said, "Shnayim shedanu ledivrei akol." Whether it's from Shimon Gamliel or it's the Rabbanon, ein dineim din. Their judgment is not valid. But again, Rabbosai, the question that we're asking is now on Shmuel, and who are we quoting to raise that objection to Shmuel? Everybody? Who are we now quoting on the top of Daf Vav Amud Aleph? No. Again, we're quoting Rabbi Avohu. Why? Because if we didn't have Rabbi Avohu, we could say that the Rabbanan disagreed with Rav Shimon Gamliel. They hold that Shnayim Shedanu Dineim Din. Not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says no, the Bali Dinim can decide they want to go to a different court. No, the Rabbanim say it's absolutely binding. No, says the Gemara, but we have a statement of Rabbi Avo, and Rabbi Avo adds two words, L'divrei HaKol, please underline L'divrei HaKol, which means that even the Rabbanim agreed to Rav Shimon Gamliel. That in a case where two judges gave a decision, that decision is not binding, and the litigants have the right to go to a different court. So the Gemara says, Gavra, Gavra Karamis. You're basing your argument, your question, on a statement of Rabbi Avo, and therefore you're objecting to Shmuel. Well, who says that Shmuel has to give up because he's contradicting Rabbi Avo? Gavra, Gavra, Karamis. You're asking a question from one Gavra to another Gavra. From Shmuel, you're asking a kasha on Shmuel from Rabbi Avo. Who says that Shmuel has to accept Rabbi Avo? If you're asking a kasha from the Braisa, well, Bryce is Tanoic literature. You can't, you know, Shmuel doesn't have the authority to undermine a Bryce of Tanoim. But as far as the Shmuel is concerned, that Bryce reflects the dissenting unique view of Rav Shimon Gamliel. The Rabbanu never accepted Rav Shimon Gamliel. They would hold Shnayim Shedanu Dineim Din. But now you're asking from Rabbi Avo, because Rabbi Avo says no. Everybody, even the Rabbanu, agree that Ein Dineim Din. Well, that's not going to impress Shmuel. Shmuel doesn't have to be impressed by Rabbi Avo. They're equals. They're both Amoraim. And you can't ask a kash from one Amora onto another Amora. Gufa, now you've mentioned Rabbi Avo. Let's go study Rabbi Avo. Amar Rabbi Avo, Shnayim Shedanu Dini Mominos, Ledivrei HaKol Ein Dineihem Din. So according to Rabbi Avo, nobody would argue that after the decision is handed down by two judges, the litigants can decide that they don't want to accept that din. They don't have to, the din is not binding. And that's what we saw in the Brice of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, just that Rabbi Avo is adding that even the Rabbanan agree to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was not expressing his unique, singular opinion, but he was reflecting the opinion of all the Tanoim. And L'divrei HaKol Ein Dineihem Din, which means that according to Rabbi Avo, the number three, as far as judgment is concerned, is absolutely critical. And one of the questions we'll have to address later is what would Rabbi Avo say about the Svara of the Ketzos HaChoshen? The Ketzos HaChoshen says that even if I grant you that two judges do not form a Bezdin, but nevertheless we should recognize the decision of these two judges as Horas Isaveheter, right? What happened to that old Svara? Rabbi Avo seems at the surface to just reject that whole approach that you can have such an entity as a horas isa v'heter in dini mominos. There's no, the halacha doesn't recognize that. So two judges, which are less than a bezdin, cannot issue a decision that's binding in halacha. It's not valid. And the litigants are free to stand up and say, shkoyach, thank you, but no thank you. You know, we want to go to a real bezdin. Rabbi Moshe, how are you feeling back there? I mean, it's a little bit hot. I mean, it's warm. Is there any possibility of getting AC? I don't know.
Sounds like
a test of powers, I think.
Yeah.
Aren't you one?
Well, I try not to get involved in fundraising if I can avoid it. So don't call me one of the powers to be. You know, no, seriously, though, can we... I mean, if the air conditioning is on, I don't know, it's very, very weak. No?
It's tilted straight out.
Yeah, I'm trying to wake you guys up, but I'm fighting against the elements here. You know, it feels like it's about like 85 today in Fahrenheit. I don't know. Maybe I'm exaggerating.
But Rabbi Avo is saying that all agree that you need three. That two is
correct. And two is not a binding judgment because that judgment is not made by a Bezdin. The litigants can up, you know, stand up from their chairs and say, goodbye, Charlie, we're going to a Bezdin.
Rabbi Avo would have to agree that if they accepted them.
That's going to come up right now, Usher. What if they accepted them? But we're not talking about a case where they accepted them. It's not like Pshara. In the case of Pshara, there's no, you know, Pshara doesn't get off the ground unless they accepted them. But we're talking about a din.
Can I ask a question about Shura? I understand about agreeing in advance writing, but let's say they start with two judges, and for whatever reason, in the middle, they maybe the judges say to them, we're going to do this as a shura, not as a dinei din. Is that okay? Or it has to be before they even start?
No, I think that could be possible, that at some point they could say, look, we don't have the ability to come to any decision, and therefore the whole business, batel mevutel null and void, we want to know if you'd accept us as pshara. And that would have tremendous significance, especially according to Rabbi Yavoh, because as long as there's only two judges, their decision will not be binding. But once they're accepted as pshara, that's going to be absolutely binding. Is anyone here from Silver Spring, Maryland, by any chance? No? Yeah, I have a friend, Yitzi Kasdan, in Silver Spring. He has an organization called Pshara. That's a... And they work out mediation based on Torah law. It's very...
It's very interesting also.
Where is it? In
Israel.
In Israel?
Yeah.
So, Eisvei Rabbi Abba le Rabbi Avoh. Now, Rabbi Abba is going to quote a Mishnah in Bechoros. And based on this Mishnah in Bechoros, he's going to raise an objection to Rabbi Avoh. And obviously, Rabbi Avoh cannot argue with a Mishnah. Now, what does it say in the Mishnah in Bechoros? This Mishnah in Bechoros deals with mistakes, errors in judgment. And here's where we're going to get into a little bit, you know, maybe the tip of the iceberg at least, of what kind of an error would generate a chiyuv nezikin, meaning compensation on the part of the judges. You know, we weren't very happy with this. You know, today there are insurance policies. You know, you can't sue me as a judge and expect to get a dime from me. But back in the day, in the halachic universe, you could sue a judge if he made an error. So we're going to have to touch on what kind of error did he actually make, and why is he held responsible for negligence such that he has to pay out of pocket to compensate that litigant that suffered a grievance, suffered a loss. So anyway, the Mishnah says the following. Don es hadin. Okay, we have to add one word to the Mishnah just to make it clear. Dayan shedon es hadin. The judge issued a decision. And unfortunately made a big boo-boo. Vizika es hachayov. Okay, in the first case, there was someone who should have been paying money, and instead Zika means he found him, he found, what?
Zaka,
that he doesn't have to pay. You know, he exonerated him from any payment whatsoever, even though he was guilty, and as a result, the other litigant took a tremendous loss. Or here's the flip case. V'chiev es hazakai, someone who really didn't have to pay, and yet the dayan found him chayav, meaning that he imposed a decision that he has to pay. Then the Mishnah in Bechoros goes on to other cases beyond the limited purview of dini momentus, of monetary law. Timei es hatar. So let's say, for example, there were fruits or vegetables or perhaps the grains, and the Mora Hora came to the decision that these are Tomei, and yet in fact they're Tar. He made a big mistake, and he paskin that they are Tomei. Tomei means, you know, you got to get rid of them, basically. Oh, now is another case of Tiher Es HaTomei. He told them that this fruit, which is actually Tomei, is Tar. Again, every single case that we're referring to has to be taken under advisement. If we were learning Masechet Bechoros, I know in the Daf Yomi they passed this not long ago, maybe a month ago, I don't know when, you would have to really go through the whole sugya. The part of this Mishnah that's most relevant to us is the opening part of the Mishnah, and that's the Dini Mavinus case of Zika Sachaya V'chiv Esa Zakai. So the Mishnah paskins Masha Asa Asui. In other words, the verdict is binding. It's the psak is not batel. Umeshalemi beso, and the dayan, this judge, will have to pay out of pocket for grievances, for compensation to the one who suffered the loss. Now, Take a look at the language of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Dun es hadin." Now, the word "dun" is in what grammatical form? Is it plural or singular? It's singular. So from the fact that the Mishnah uses this word "done" as a verb that's in singular, it would seem that we're dealing with one single dayan.
And if they gave him permission, two of you permission, then...
Okay, so you're up to permission. You're already a step ahead of me. But before we get to permission, the fact that the Mishnah says that "done es hadin," and now he has to pay out of pocket, that teaches us that even though he was alone as a single judge, nevertheless, the judgment that he issued is binding. If it's not binding, then the money goes back and we start from scratch and there's no reason to pay compensation. The fact that he pays compensation is predicated on the assumption that the din is valid. So basically, this Mishnah embodies the following principle. Dayan shedon es hadin, right? Dayan echad shedon es hadin. Is Zika Sachaev Chivas Azakai Dino Din. Again, that doesn't say that in the Mishnah, but it implies it, because otherwise, why would the Mishnah say Mishalami Beso that he has to pay unless the din is a din? So we see clearly that Rabbi Avo cannot be right. Rabbi Avo made a statement that Divrei HaKol, everybody agrees that if you have less than three judges on a court, the decision is not binding. And they could decide, the litigants could decide to go to a different basin. Well, here, the decision is absolutely binding. Here we have a Mishnah that contradicts Rabbi Avo. So asks Rabbi Abba. Say it again? Oh, now what about Shmuel? This kasha was Eisvei Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Avo. So Jerry asked the fine question, what about Shmuel? Shmuel said, Shnaim Shedanu Dineim Din. Right? So you'll ask me, well, here the Mishnah went even a step further. The word "done" in singular indicates that even one judge would have been insufficient. And Shmuel said only two judges. And the answer is, that's not a kash at all, the way Tosa said it back on Daf Heyamid Beis, the Ramaskel Shnaim, that Huadin Dechad Nami Dinei Din. According to Shmuel, even one judge has the status of Dini Din. Shmuel only mentions two to tell you that it's still a Bezin Chatzah. So Shmuel would quote this Mishnah in Bechoras as a proof text, but now it becomes a kasha contradiction to Rabbi Avo, because Shmuel holds that the judgment of one din is binding. Rabbi Avo holds the judgment of anything less than three judges is not binding. And not only that, Rabbi Avo says, L'divrei HaKol. He doesn't leave any window open for some sort of Tana that might be Cholek. All the Tanoim accepted, you must have three judges. How then could the Mishnah tell me in Bechoros that Don Es Hadin, which means that one judge who judged, and he made a mistake, he has to pay out of pocket. Why should he have to pay out of pocket if Ain Dinov did? If his din is not valid, then the whole story is completely null and void. Just rip it out of the records book, and there's no record of this din. Why should he have to pay then for compensation? And for the Gemara, Hacham Mayaskin and the Kiblu Alayu. The case here in Masech de Bechoros is where the litigants accepted these judges, or in our case, one single judge.
It's a little shver on the Temat Tatar.
Correct. You have to know, we don't know exactly what's going on in the Sefer, this Mishnah with Temat Tatar and Tira Satome. But what the Gemara is introducing here is a new concept called Kiblu Alayu. We touched on this in the past, but now we're seeing it head on. That Kiblu Alayu means that the litigants can accept a din even if that din is not issued by a Bezdin. So we're going now according to Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo holds that for a Bezdin you need a minimum of three judges. How could there be a Mishnah that validates and recognizes the decision of one judge? And the answer is Kiblu Alayu. Now again, Kiblu Alayu is a bit of a cop out teretz, because what do you mean Kiblu Alayu? I mean, we're talking about a case where where there was some sort of a din. You know, kibbu alayu means like a pshara kind of halacha, where we obviate the need for a din. Here it's danu es hadin. I mean, the whole Mishnah in Bechoros is analyzing the question of what's the status of a judgment that was made in error. And is that error enough to undermine the din? And the answer is no. And you even have to pay for that in damages. So we're talking about whether or not this din is valid. If you're talking about kibul alayu, that's a whole different story. I mean, kibul alayu means that the litigants committed themselves on a monetary level to pay. If I'm the one who found chayav, I have to pay you. If you're the one who found chayav, you have to pay me. But that was a commitment, a voluntary commitment on their part. Why would the Mishnah have to tell me that's a din? You know, that we've recognized their decision as a din. So that's a little bit of a kvetch teretz here. The Gemara is really pushing an elephant into the eye of a needle here. But the Gemara has a more fundamental objection. And that is the Hachi Amai Mishalmi Beso. If they accepted these judges, or in this case one single judge, then that's their commitment. They have a monetary commitment to accept that decision. And no backs. You know, you can't reverse that commitment. Why should the judge be found guilty of making a big mistake and therefore he has to pay out of pocket when they accepted upon themselves with a monetary, what we call a das hamischayev, meaning a commitment that they will accept the din of this individual single judge? The Gemara says that kibul alayu has to be broken down into two different dimensions. There's what we call an absolute kibul alayu, and then there's a partial kibul alayu. The amru lei, what did the litigants say to these two, to this one judge? Daitlan din Torah. We want you to give a decision that's based on the halacha. In that case, even Rabbi Avo would agree that since they, the litigants, recognize this dayan to give them a decision, that decision is binding. Now you'll ask me if they recognize that and they gave the license to this one single dayan, and therefore that upgrades the dayan to the status of a din, that his din is valid, then why does the dayan have to pay out of pocket? The answer is they didn't give a carte blanche agreement and say, you know, whatever decision you make, we're going to accept that decision. No, it wasn't all inclusive. It was a very limited kind of commitment on their part. They said, look, if you're going to give us a din that's based on the din Torah that reflects the halacha, then we're in, count us in. But in this case, did this dayan actually issue a decision that was based on the halacha? No. How do I know this? Because the whole thrust of the braisa is Zika es achayov, v'chiyav es hazakai, which means according to Torah law, he was chayav and he was mezakim, and this dayan was mezakim, or vice versa. We see, therefore, that he didn't deliver the goods. They accepted him to deliver the goods, meaning a din Torah, a din that reflects the laws, the rules of the Torah, and he didn't do so. And therefore, he's personally responsible. But you'll ask me, so why is his decision binding? And the answer is, his decision is binding because of kibul alayu. Meaning, to set up a decision that's binding, all you need is kibul alayu. Kibul alayu means we recognize you as our deciding judge. That makes him into a deciding judge that could create a din, and that din is going to be binding. It's compelled, it's imposed upon both Balei Din because they both accepted him as their dayan, and that's it. That din is din. It's irreversible. It's valid. But if you ask me, why do they have to pay damages and compensation in this case where the Balei Dinim, both of them agreed that this judge should judge the case and issue a din? The answer is because they stipulated that din should be the din Torah. They were well aware of the fact that there might be a mistake here in judgment, which would be a judgment that doesn't reflect the din Torah. Again, the chances of that happening are very slight, but you know, a good lawyer will make sure that his clients are covered for all possible scenarios. So the clients want to be covered, says the lawyer, in a case where the judge issues a law that doesn't affect the Torah. And what does the judge do? The judge now accepts the you know, the conditions that were set in front of him, he has a great deal of confidence that he will issue a decision that in fact reflects the halacha. And he's not worried about the you know, the level of risk that he's taking, that maybe he'll make an error. Unfortunately, as things turned out, he made a major error, and somebody lost money. He was a dayan with a din, because Kibla Alai was enough to recognize him and empower him as a dayan, even according to Rabbi Avo. Even Rabbi Avo, who disagrees with the statement of Shmuel that the Torah recognizes the validity of one judge, even Rava would agree in the context of Rabbi Avo that if the litigants accepted that judge and they gave him authority to judge them, then the din of that bezdin, of that dayan, is absolutely binding. However, the lawyer was very sharp in this case, recognizing and representing his client's needs. He added a stipulation that don't think as a dayan now you're going to be exempt from payment in the event you make a mistake and somebody suffers a loss. You're still going to be in the driver's seat, you're still being held responsible for negligence if you issue the wrong decision. Now, you and I might have said, well, if he issued the wrong decision that doesn't reflect the Torah law, then we should completely reject his din. However, the mistake that the dayan made is much more subtle. And even though it's not the final din of the Torah, but it is a din that's recognized by the Torah. Rabbi Olson, do you see where we're walking on eggshells over here? We're really slicing things very, very thin. On the one end, we're saying that Kiblu Alayu, they accepted his judgment, and his din is a din. But they didn't go all out. They didn't give him a total carte blanche, you know, an open card. They didn't give him an open-ended right. They said din Torah, dinus leke din Torah. But somehow, that dinus leke din Torah empowers that single judge with the authority to create a din, a ruling that is binding. Binding in the sense it's irreversible. Even though he made an error. Even though he's mezakas achayev or he's mechayev azaka, the inner pella here. This Gemara is really slicing it with a very sharp razor. We're going to say that the Kiblu Alayu dynasty din Torah is enough to empower and elevate this single judge, even according to Rabbi Avo, to the status of a din. His verdict is a din. What does that mean? It's a din? Irreversible. No backs. You can't appeal the case.
And he shouldn't have to pay.
But he has to pay. Why does he have to pay? Because they did a cool move over here. What they said was to the judge, they said, give us a judgment. It's got to be din Torah. And what they were implying is that if you're going to give us a judgment that's not strictly a reflection of din Torah, you're going to have to pay for that. Although at the same time, the din is din. So that's the paradox. What kind of mistake did this judge make? Somehow, I don't know what happened. You know, he got up on the wrong side of the bed that morning and he forgot a Mishnah. He forgot a Mishnah. You know, for a dayan to forget a Mishnah is like unheard of. So in that case, this is not a din. If he openly violates, you know, he openly contradicts the law of the Mishnah, Omar Av Sheshes, Omar Av Asi, if a dayan was taught by Divrei Mishnah, is chozer, the din is completely null and void. The Mishnah is clear. It's a stam Mishnah. I mean, the Mishnah doesn't allow for any dissenting view. And the halacha was formulated black on white. That can't be the case that we're dealing with. If the mistake that this dayan made was against a Mishnah, then that din is not a din. The Mishnah stands up and yells and screams at him. That's not a din. You're not within the halachic purview, the halachic guidelines. Ela ditah b'shikul adas. What kind of mistake did the judge make? What's he guilty of? Shikul adas. Judgment call. What's that all about? What do you mean he made a mistake in judgment call? So if he made a mistake in judgment call, why is he held responsible? Where's the element of negligence? You know, he made a judgment, and that was his judgment. You know, I don't know if there's anyone here who follows baseball, which in my book is the most boring sport that was ever invented. But people excited. I mean, again, if you go to the stadium and you get a good seat, that's one thing. But to watch it on television, I don't know, it's pretty much a waste of time. But anyway. Okay. In any event, so what happens? You know, there's an umpire, right? And there's a and there's a pitcher and a catcher. And the question is, you know, there's a certain area where it's called a strike, and it's a little bit to the left and the right. It's a ball, and there's a whole difference between a strike and a ball. So they today they have video cameras. You know, yeah, you have this in football also. You know, do you ever see this where they play the they replay the thing? I mean, it's partially a bush of a cherpa for the umpires. I don't know how they survive this. Honestly, but it's okay. That's called a tos in shikol hadas. I mean, the umpire was nobody bribed him necessarily. You know, he looked and he saw and he observed and he made the call. That was his judgment. He thought that, you know, it was a fumble, or he thought it was a strike, and so forth. So why does he have to pay out of pocket for that? So the Gemara says, hey, chidomi shikol hadas. Let's whittle it down even further. What is a shikol hadas? And what is this mistake that he made? And the Gemara says, Amara Papa, Kigon Tre Tanoi. It's not a Stam Mishnah, it's a Mishnah that records a dispute, a debate amongst two Tanoim. Or alternatively, Tre Amoroim. There was a machlokas in the Gemara between two Amoroim. The Pligi Adodi, one argues against the other. Veloit Mar Hilchas Alokimar Velokimar. There was never a formal decision made, you know, where the Chachomim stood up as a vote. And they issued a final decision. So what happens? At this point, I would say the judge is completely guiltless if he decided in favor of one opinion amongst the Tanoim or the Amoroim. V'sugyon di alma aliba dechad minayhu. But the sugya, even though they never made a formal decision, the sugya indicates the way the halacha was accepted. What does that mean, the way the halacha was accepted? So Rashi says that there was a tradition amongst the judges. I think that's called precedent, if you're familiar with law, right? So there's a precedent here. In, let's say in one generation there was a tremendous controversy, and it came to no absolute decision. And then, over the course of time, there are precedents which set a kind of tradition amongst the judiciary as to which way the halacha paskins. It was never an official psak. If there was an official psak, that's like a stam mishnah, and the original debate is just history, and therefore he's contradicting the mishnah, so to speak, not literally. And that's not a din. But here's a case where there was never a formal decision, but there was an implicit decision that developed over the course of time with precedent after precedent, and the Dayanim had a tradition that we paskin like this opinion against the other opinion. V'azal ihu v'avid ki'idach. And he went ahead, the single judge, and he decided to paskin based on the other opinion. Again, that other opinion was a valid opinion, and we never formally rejected that opinion, but the tradition has it that most of the Dayanim over the course of time accepted the other opinion, and now he decides he thinks he can outsmart all the other judgments, and he's going to go back to the original debate. So that's called Azaliu. He went ahead, the Ovid Kidach, and he decided to pass like the other. That was a great mistake on his part. And that's called a mistake, Hainu Vashikol Adas. And in this case, there's grievance on the part of the one who suffered the loss, because on the one hand, we cannot undermine this decision. It's valid, because they accepted this judge, and his judgment does reflect the Torah law in the sense that there is a dissenting view, and he has a right to stand on the shoulders of the dissenting view. But on the other hand, in the course of judgment, this is called a tos. Why is it called a tos? Because he has to know better. He has to be an expert, not only in the theoretical law and the various opinions, and conceptually, he also has to be an expert in the tradition of the court system. And if there's a definite tradition to paskin like so-and-so, and he went ahead and he paskin against that so-and-so, then he is held responsible, and he has to pay compensation. Okay, then, if somebody has a pencil, Osher, you have a pencil for me, I just want to make a note where we're stopping. Tomorrow we'll stop Lineta with Lema Ketanoi. I'll give you this right back. And if anyone has any comments or questions, now's a great time. And if not, I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a wonderful day.
This concept of Kimli.
Kimli. Oh, okay, let's think about that.
So this only gets started when there's a dissenting opinion in the Mishnah. It was Stam Mishnah,
you're asking what?
1.7
Kimli would mean that. So what's the import of Kimli?
Kimli,
he doesn't have to pay in such a case? In Kimli? And that's something I'd have to research. I can only tell you... I'm not sure whether he pays in this case or not, but I can only tell you the difference between our sugya and Kimli. Ozil Kavase Dechad means that he knew that he was going against the majority opinion. Kimli means where I know that this was the tradition of Psach, that we paskin like so and so. Here he's making his own decision, that's called Shikul Hadas, that we should be paskin like so and so. And he's undermining the tradition. For that he's held responsible. But Kimli could be that he's not held responsible.
He's undermining the tradition
of Dayanim, of Rove Dayanim over the course of time.
He doesn't know. The Ta'ut he's doing that.
Well, I don't know. The Gemara calls it, again, ultimately it's called a Ta'ut, but it's a Shikul Hadas. Shikul Hadas means he weighed the evidence in the conceptual framework, and he tipped the scale and decided as a judgment call in favor of so and so. So that would be valid, except for one problem, and that is that he's undermining the tradition of how the halacha evolves. And Kimli, I think he's saying that I know that this is the tradition, that I know that we passing like Beis Hillel against Beit Shammai. And that might offer him an extra insurance, an extra protection. I don't know. But if you can research Kimli, I don't know. Maybe he's coming up later in Masechta Sanhedrin, I don't know.